the question. Is seclusion, is that an activity or is that a result of certain practice?
Both, depending how you look at it. So it has to start as an activity. It has to start something you actively seek. But then if you practice rightly, your mind becomes secluded from unwholesome things, and that's then the result. And that's why the Buddha did say that the true seclusion is when mind is free from greed, aversion, delusion, not when one is away from people. Although he might be alone, he still dwells in company of sensual desire and unwholesome states. But that resulting seclusion would not just come magically if you have not, if you can't even like live alone, be by yourself, at least for some time of the day. So that's why you have to do it as a practice that can then lead to the actual seclusion. And it's kind of a balance of both, in a sense, because sometimes people try to justify non-physical seclusion, would say, well, see, the true seclusion is just being free from unwholesome states. Thus, doesn't matter if I just spend my days with people all day long. And then you have the other group of people who just hates all the people and just wants to be alone because that's an easier mode of existence. And then they just quote the suttas of the activity aspect of seclusion. But that aspect in the gradual training comes much later. You don't start with it. If you're starting with it, there's usually something else there. Some other kind of ulterior motive you have.
Yeah, so basically the Buddhist teaching could actually be very easily wrongly grasped to actually enforce your version.
Easy, stay away from, of course, people, yeah, anything. The Buddha himself giving instruction, if you don't attend to it rightly, you just use it for your own sake, of your own wrong views. Yeah.
It's interesting. In the suttas, like, is to be content in solitude or to delight in seclusion is considered quite a high
achievement. Yeah, work.
It's really work to get there.
Yeah.
And I mean, one thing to consider in regard to that is, like, you know, if for a monk at that time, dwelling in solitude wouldn't necessarily mean quite the same thing as it would today.
Mm.
As in, it would not just be, okay, I'm in a room on my own, but like whenever I want, I can contact somebody or I can, you know, access some distraction or whatever. Mm. It's like, really, I'm in my own on a forest, and even if I want to,
yeah,
there is nobody around. So it's like, yeah, to be content within that environment is quite a high achievement.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's not just like, oh, I'll go on my own and I can do whatever I want and, you know, go back and contact people or be, you know, wherever I want. It's like you have to kind of put yourself into that mental state, even if you're not in this, you don't have to kind of, I don't know, I'll go up on a mountain and forsake everything, but like into that, you know, that mental state of, okay, isolation and complete isolation. Ultimately, I mean, that's obviously then a training that you have to work towards.
Difficult thing to do, to delight in solitude.
Mm.
But once there's delight in solitude, the goal is quickly achieved.
Mm.
Yeah.
There's that discourse.
Yeah, because it's the whole gradual training we talk about. That's what it leads to. Delighting in solitude.
Yeah. And it's like
preferring it.
Just to be literally alone, even without anything to do, without anything.
Yeah, of course. Exactly. Yeah. The non-activity, the true non-activity,
Just to be alone with yourself, which is the most. It's also like the worst punishment you can give to somebody in the world. Yeah. You put them in solitary confinement.
Without
anything.
Visible activity they can engage with, and it becomes unbearable.
Confining, as we were talking.
Confining.
About. When you have others around, there's an opportunity for distraction.
Yeah, but again, like you do have to emphasize that It's not just something, okay, so I'll just train for so long. You train by keeping the precepts, guarding the sense doors, don't give your eyes to unwholesome state, certainly don't act out of them. And then delight in solitude will come as a result of that, that then you can actively develop further. If you're trying to jump the queue before you have been established in the right view, established in virtue, all those things that the Buddha lists to that monk that want to go in solitude who wasn't ready, well, you won't be ready. You'll be going for wrong reasons and just dwell there either with mind infested with lust or hatred or whatever else bothers you. And you'll fail in that sense. And also what can easily happen, see, like, people whose minds are easily bothered by sight, sound, smell, taste, touches. It can kind of play into that natural tendency to just avoid things that bother me. Oh, because, you know, the Buddha said seclusion is the utmost goal, so I feel justified then in just sitting in my kuti, not seeing, not talking to anybody, not doing anything, because the slightest act will just disturb my mind, make it filled with ill will, flooded with passion, and so on. So then your seclusion becomes your coping mechanism, whereby you're super, hyper, extra sensitive. Even before, when you were a layman, you were not that sensitive. You could actually endure more. But now, like, the ticking clock is driving me nuts. The blow of wind, the water, river, I just can't bear this noise. My meditation is suffering. I need to change a kuti. I need to change a monastery. I need to change a country. I need to change a place. Quiet, quiet, earplugs, soundproof room. That's not seclusion. That's absolute, complete kind of, like, extreme way, perversion of avoidance. Avoiding things that bother you because your view still thinks the bother comes from those things. So you haven't even abandoned the mundane wrong views of where the suffering comes from. While you sit in your padded cell, where nothing can come through, when you're at peace. That's not the peace. I mean, highway robbers chopping your limbs, your mind doesn't move. Well, that's the peace, yeah. Elements, enduring elements, discomfort, I mean, you can read, read the Kandaka stories around, you know, Vinaya and then how the monks lived, the engagement and the exposure and the people and stuff. And it's like, some of it was quite hectic, but they were arahants with supernatural powers and stuff like that. So it's like, okay, so there is probably some balance there that today's average Buddhist would not necessarily see. So like, okay, so let me then start in the right order as the Buddha described in the gradual training. Yeah, you know, simplify your life. Don't sit in the midst of a loud crowd. Avoid obviously unwholesome environment, but don't get too precious about it because it's going to go too much the other way. And it's like you start enjoying seclusion because you start feeling the bother even more because you don't know how to deal with it. And it's like the dog tied around the post, tries to get himself free and ends up being even more tied to the post. Even shorter leash. So ultimately, the bother, the disturbances, doesn't come from the world. It comes from that craving, comes from that resistance. So same goes with the company. And if the mind moves pleasantly, unpleasantly, towards the company, it's all because of your own resistance towards it, not because of that person or these people and so on. So that's where the true solitude is, when that has been calmed and tamed and extinguished, that movement, that craving, that resistance. And that's why the Buddha said, well, the suttas say arahant, he's as in private, so in public. As in public, so in private. There's no difference. His behavior does not change. There's no different reference point to that. And like the Buddha said, Tathagata, he's at ease, whether he's an assembly of the gods or villages, one person, thousand, nothing changes in terms of his mental composure. So that's the true solitude.
So it's more in regard to how jhanas are usually described, basically seclusion from a wholesome state.
Yeah.
But to see what those are, it's beneficial to go into physical seclusion, so, or kind of, yeah, how to say, decrease the intensity of things from the world, so that you can see these things.
And the step, the necessity of going into physical seclusion that we ourselves talked about in the past many times, comes after you have been taming your senses properly, thoroughly, not giving rise to a wholesome state, which comes after you've been thoroughly established in virtue and precepts. Not like over a weekend or something, and now you're going to go into seclusion so that by the end of the week you enter jhana. So, becoming established in precepts, well, how many years have you spent not being established in precepts? So, divided by half, depending on your effort, give or take.
Plus the previous lives.
So, it's going to take a while for that mind to tame. Sure, you're going to have minor releases, so to speak, insights and so on, but it's not a race, really. Like, oh, I'll just do this. If it is, it's because you're still acting out of your craving. Because, well, whether I get it or not, it's still a preferable mode of existence. Taming and sense restraint is factually better, even according to your own central values. The only reason people turn to sensuality is because it hurts if they don't. So first you're touched by pain, that's why then you seek delight and pleasure and so on. And that's why you would also want to not be touched by that pain in the first place. So if you tame your senses, the desires will fade, the pressures will lessen, and you'll be factually more content and happier.
So you need like 80% physical seclusion, not 100%. There's no point in it. And so just so that you have a basis for seeing your mind, having things calm down. So like this monastery is probably like an 80% physical seclusion place, so that you can actually do that, try get into the real solitude of 100% mental seclusion.
Well, that's the thing, the real solitude will be that mental.
Yeah,
so
that's what you said.
There is no like 100% physical solitude. I mean, you can aim for it, but that means you're overshooting the mark now.
Yeah.
You know, there are empty rooms, empty huts, empty roots of a tree. Go there, monks, and contemplate things, basically. So, as I said, there is somebody who starts that way can become too precious, but it won't be hard to see, if you're honest, that preciousness comes from, oh, I don't want to be bothered. Like, I resist it. I'm averse to the idea of, so that's why I'm secluded. It's like, well, no, then I should be bothered. Not by something terribly unwholesome, but by duties or answering a question and so on. Like, well, if that bothers me, when the body starts breaking apart and illnesses and hospitals and so on, well, my practice will go out of the window because I've been practicing it on a wrong field. That's not where you play this.